Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. The unemployment rate in the San Antonio area is 3.8% as of October. That's almost 1% lower than the national average at 4.7%, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. Economists call 5% unemployment full employment and say essentially anyone who wants a job in the market can find one. But is that actually the case? And what about employers? Can you find people that you want to hire? And we are now living in a working world of underemployment. That might mean that if you have a job, but it doesn't pay enough to meet the living standards. What is the state of unemployment in San Antonio and Texas today? There are a lot of ways for you to join us in this conversation. You can give us a call at 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Email us with questions and comments to The Source at tpr.org and tweet us at TPR Source, and that number again, 210-614-8980. We're joined by Bill Beardall. He is the executive director of the Equal Justice Center. We have Ricardo Ramirez with us. He is the director of analytics and performance and strategy for Workforce Solutions Alamo. And Cal Soto is a staff attorney and worker rights coordinator for the National Day Laborer Organizing Network. So, Ricardo, let me turn to you so we can kind of dig into these statistics. When we say that San Antonio unemployment is at 3.8%, what should I make of that?
What we've seen is that the unemployment rate continues to go down, not only here in San Antonio, but also in most of the surrounding counties. There is broad demand for jobs right now in several industries. And at the same time, there's many occupations that we are trying to meet the demand for and yet not be able to fill those jobs even when the unemployment is this low.
Is it a problem to have unemployment this low?
Well, part of what may be happening is that after the recession and after the Hurricane Harvey, the labor force itself may be shrinking nationwide. As compared to the labor force, the people who are actively searching for work and could be unemployed or employed has been overall in the nation shrinking. Employers are reaching further down to hire individuals who may have less skills. So with the unemployment being this low, it may be good for certain populations who may not find it as easy to compete for jobs when they have lower skills, lower levels of education, more family responsibilities that they can't have to deal with. So for some groups, this is a good time. If the unemployment keeps low, if the labor demand keeps high and keeps rising and we're able to maintain that demand, then hopefully, which is one of our biggest goals, is to lift populations in the San Antonio area who may be disadvantaged and not have the opportunities that we may be having now.
And is this having an impact on wages?
I have for wages that the highest wages for the area are coming from management of companies and enterprises industries, which pay about $2,451 weekly average wages. For mining, quarrying, oil and gas extraction, about $1,661. These are weekly average wages.
Uh-huh.
Professional technical services, information, finance. Now, these wages are the highest ones
they're
available
peaking
in the area, but they're mostly for higher skilled, higher level education.
That's okay. All right, so our phone lines are open. We want to hear what the community has to say, what you're seeing in the labor market. If you're an employer, if you're finding the people to fill your jobs, if you're looking for work, and you can't find it, with these numbers, they seem like a sham to you, give us a call, 210-614-8980. And Robert has called in. Robert, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, how's it going?
It's going all right. How are you?
All right, I suppose. My main comment was that in the last 20 years, I've lived at all four corners of the U.S., from Virginia to Texas to Tacoma, Washington, and the Hawaiian Islands. And everywhere I've been, the average job doesn't really adequately cover the cost of living there. Even from San Antonio, that used to be relatively cheap 10 years ago, to today. So $10, $11 an hour for the average job, just nowhere can get you ahead of your bills and actually cover any of the unexpected costs of life. So is there anything that anybody has in the ways of plans on how to raise the wages for the average working man?
All right. Thank you for that call, Robert. We appreciate that. So let's turn to Bill Beardall. He's the executive director of the Equal Justice Center, clinical professor of law at the University of Texas at Austin. Do you see anything happening with wages? What's happening in the workforce?
Yeah, Dave, I think what's happened, despite the low unemployment rate, that's official unemployment rate, just as Robert mentioned, at the lower levels of the wage scale, people making $10 and $12 an hour or even less, people are still struggling. People are working hard, as hard as they ever have, and wages have been stagnant. And the levels of exploitation that we see in our statewide practice, including in San Antonio, have a lot of people making less than minimum wage and not getting paid all for all their hours of work. And that's a problem for all of us. And as Robert described, it's a problem for people trying to support themselves and their families. And the more, and our real problem there is lack of enforcement of the wage laws. And the second problem is that the wage laws have stagnated so that the minimum wage is only $7.25 an hour, even though a living wage is somewhere around $15, $16, $17 an hour.
When you say exploitation, is there anything you can give me an example?
I'll give you two examples in particular that we see a lot in our practice at the Equal Justice Center. One is wage theft. That is complete non-payment of wages for some vulnerable workers, or underpayment of wages where they're not paid for all their hours, or they're not paid, they're working 60, 70 hours a week and not getting overtime pay. That's one. And the second one that's particularly timely right now is sexual harassment and outright sexual assault in the workplace. It's shockingly common how often that happens. And it's vulnerable workers who need the job and can't afford to complain about that and are bullied and put economically bullied into putting up with that kind of sexual assault and sexual harassment on the job because they can't afford to lose that job or they'll lose their ability to support their families.
Kyle Soto with the National Day Laborers Organizing Network, are you seeing that as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I can definitely speak to the wage theft being just kind of an epidemic. When you talk about an economy that is based off of really quick-moving markets, really needing to do a lot of, for example, post-Hurricane Harvey, a lot of construction really quickly, there's oftentimes a lack of the infrastructure, the regular infrastructure that's put in place to make sure that we enforce labor protections as stringently as possible. And so what you see is exactly what Bill was saying, is that you see the most vulnerable workers really run into employers sometimes, certain ones that try to take advantage of that situation and start to not pay wages at the end of the day, not pay overtime hours, not provide specific protections. So we did this study just after Hurricane Harvey, talking specifically with temporary construction workers in Houston, and we found that just in the 3 weeks after the storm, over a quarter of the workers we talked to, 26%, had a case of wage theft happen, and that added up to over $20,000 in a three-week period, which is a lot of money for specifically the lower end of construction and demolition workers.
So someone will pick up a day laborer and say, I'll pay you, I don't know how much, $100 to help me do this for the day. And then at the end of the day, they say, sorry, I'm not going to pay you. What are you going to do about it? And the guy, he may have questions about his status, and he's not going to go to the law. Is that what happens, Cal?
That's exactly right. I mean, it's a situation where the workers feel vulnerable already, and they are in many ways, they're out there. They know that they're putting themselves out there and putting themselves at risk just by standing out on the corner, and yet they go out there every morning and put themselves out there to just to do work, to be able to make money to support themselves, support their families. And at the end of the day, they really aren't guaranteed whether they're going to get their pay or their full pay. And so sometimes it happens, they say, well, I'm just not going to pay you straight up. Maybe make a reference to the immigration status of the worker as kind of a veiled threat. Sometimes it's a direct threat. And those threats are taken really seriously by workers. So they don't feel like there is recourse. I mean, another thing that we saw in this specific study is that a lot of workers didn't even know where exactly to go. Some identified the police, but really 90% of the workers we spoke to hadn't heard of the Texas Workforce Commission or the Department of Labor. And many felt uncomfortable calling the police because of questions of whether they would ask about their status as well. And so there's definitely a vacuum in terms of who can step in to actually enforce these protections for the workers.
And Cal, are you seeing that this is increasing, that wage theft is happening more often?
Yes. We're seeing that wage theft, I think, is the numbers are going up. Specifically, I think, in Texas after the storm, we saw that uptick with those specific numbers of how many cases were happening right after the storm. I think nationwide we're seeing this idea of retaliation, whether it's direct or indirect, like I mentioned. The specter, the fear of speaking out is a lot more present, and many fewer workers, even if they have cases, are coming forward to actually report labor violations.
And Bill, do you see this as a problem for the recovery? If we don't have workers, if workers don't think they're going to get paid, do you think that this is going to dry up the few people that we have willing to do this labor?
Well, it will certainly have an adverse impact, and there's such a surge in labor and such a surge in predatory employers who are drawn to a employment need surge like in the post-Harvey reconstruction, that you're going to get a good bit of, even more than usual, of this kind of exploitation. But let me follow up on something else that Cal said. These are not new problems. They're not unique to the post-Harvey reconstruction effort. They are working in the background in all parts of the state all the time. They just get intensified in that surge of employment need after a disaster like that. And there is something workers can do about this, and that is enforce the law themselves, especially now when we have a state government that's not committed to wage enforcement. We have a federal government that's backed off of its commitment to wage enforcement. On these wage laws, those workers can go bring their own legal action. In the law, we call that acting as a private attorney general. They themselves can bring their own lawsuits to recover wages and damages and even the attorney fees that their attorneys incurred. That's what we do at the Equal Justice Center, representing workers on a nonprofit basis across the state. We recovered more than $1 million last year in unpaid wages. Those are workers who were enforcing the law themselves as private attorneys general.
Okay.
And it is important for them to recognize they have those rights.
We'll continue talking about the labor market. What happens when unemployment gets so low, 3.8% here in San Antonio? What happens across the nation? Is this what you're experiencing in the marketplace? Give us a call. We've got some callers lined up. We'll take them when we come back from this quick break. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The Source continues after this quick break. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. America's job market, it's a little bit like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. You don't want it too hot or too cold. It needs to be just right. And some experts believe that right now it's too hot. The U.S. unemployment rate is 4.7%. And that's why some experts think the U.S. economy is at full employment, which means employers can't find many more available and qualified workers for their open jobs. What does that mean for you? We want to hear about what's really happening in the job market, according to you. Give us a call, 210-614-8980, like Andy called in. Hi, Andy. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
How you doing?
All right. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just calling because I heard the comments that everybody made, and the city needs to do is the city always boasts about how great San Antonio is and the best place to live and that you should move to Texas and the number one city. And we have so much to offer. What the city needs to do is lift the minimum wage to $15 an hour minimum. So this way everybody can get to a point where they can maybe survive on a paycheck, at least a paycheck that will last you 2 weeks instead of a check that lasts barely a week. And, you know, the mayor just won. I voted for the mayor, Rodenberg, and you saw what's happened with the city, finding the people there that Scully had to dismiss for stealing the money. And the mayor really needs to step up to the plate and get rid of Scully.
Okay. I think we're getting off topic here, but I appreciate your point. So I'm going to dig into that angle where Bill Bierdolf, with the executive director of the Equal Justice Center, clinical professor of law at the University of Texas at Austin, the city of San Antonio raising the minimum wage. Cities in Texas don't have that ability. But what about, from the state level?
Well, the state has the ability to raise the minimum wage. And in fact, more than half the states now have raised their minimum wage to levels higher than the federal minimum wage. And some of them are either have already raised their wage or on track to go to wage levels over the next couple of years that are between $15 and $20 an hour, which is more consistent with a living wage in all the studies. Texas hasn't done that. I don't see Texas doing that anytime soon. And in fact, Texas has prohibited cities like San Antonio and Houston and Austin and Dallas from adopting their own minimum wage laws, except where the city can raise the wages for people who contract with the city or people who are employed by the city. This is a problem. We're going to need a federal minimum wage law to raise wages to a living level for all those states that are not that are lagging behind in wage protection.
Well, what about organizing? If you have supply and demand and you're able to organize and fight management with organized labor, Cal Soto, is that an option?
Absolutely. I mean, I can talk about two different ways of doing that. I mean, you just mentioned one, the traditional model of getting together your workplace and saying we are going to create ourselves a union and our union is going to set specific labor standards for our specific workplace. And that can raise the wage for everyone in your specific factory or in your industry. Something that's happening on the street level, even with day laborers, is that corners, for example, hiring sites, are becoming organized themselves, where everyone who gets dispatched from a specific corner, for example, in Pasadena outside Houston, is saying, we're not going to leave this corner for less than $13 an hour, for less than $15 an hour. And if a person comes up and offers us a job, we're going to stand in solidarity with each other and say, this is what we work for, and if you offer us less, we're sorry, but you're going to have to go somewhere else to find that. So
yeah, but then we just heard earlier that they don't get paid at the end of the day. They get stiffed.
It's true. I mean, and that's what's so actually impressive about the corners where they do this. They are trying their best, as Bill said, to enforce the law themselves. So Bill brought up Private Attorney General Act as one way of doing that through the courts. This is a way of doing it just within your group and banding together and saying, we're going to look out for each other. So if that means setting your own minimum wage for your corner, that's that. If it means following up, if you know that an employer has stolen wages from another worker before, you point that person out and say, we're not working for you anymore. And that happens a lot, and it's a really effective way of protecting at least your corner, your community of workers that you work with. So,
Cal, what if sometimes cities can organize the day laborers, give them identification, say that this is a day, our day laborer has passed our scrutiny and he can be picked up at a certain locations that the city authorizes. This eliminates a level of risk for the people who hire these guys and the guys who are hired.
Yeah, one of the things that has been a movement over the last 20 years is the founding of worker centers. And these specific centers sometimes are in partnership with cities, sometimes are just, again, these bands of workers who come together and become formal enough to set up their own shop. And the centers act exactly how you said, to create a safer place for workers to negotiate their jobs, to make sure that they hold employers and each other accountable to the work that they're agreeing to do, and also to find skills and become a community center for these workers. And yeah, it creates a much better ecosystem, a healthier ecosystem, I think, for the communities that have them. And we see lower levels of wage theft, lower levels of health and safety risks, and better wages at these centers. And they're in Houston, they're in Dallas and Austin, and hopefully in San Antonio soon as well.
Okay, let's get Sandy on the line. She called in. And hi, Sandy. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call. I'm an administrative assistant with over 10 years' experience. I've been fortunate to be in positions where I've handled an extreme amount of responsibility for senior executives, vice presidents, CEOs, presidents. So I've got a very well-rounded resume, but I cannot find employment anywhere. The best I've been offered is emails from insurance companies saying, why don't you become an insurance agent? I don't want to be an insurance agent. I want to be an administrative assistant. I've gone through job boards. I've gone through professional agencies, and nothing seems to work. Do you have any advice for me?
Sandy, thank you for the call. So, Ricardo, you want to talk about what you're hearing here? Ricardo Ramirez, he's a director of analytics and strategy for Workforce Solutions Alamo.
Yes, so we have been seeing a lot of job demand increasing for high-paying jobs and also for low-paying jobs, which means that the wages, the demand for jobs in the area are splitting, which will probably not help for equality purposes, somewhat related to the conversation happening with our many workers not finding, you know, the living wages that we need to be okay.
Sure, but when we have like a number, you know, that we're talking about here, that San Antonio has 3.8% unemployment, you know, that's a nice number to look at, but doesn't really give you a whole lot of information about what's happening in the different sectors of our economy. And so, as Sandy says, she's looking to be an administrative assistant, and she's got all these skills. Is that just a particular soft area of the market? There's oversupply of people who can do those jobs?
That could definitely be the case. For example, in healthcare, it seems that they overhired administrative staff so that the ratio between the doctors and the support staff was too high. And so we've seen some layoffs related to the healthcare industry in that relation. And that may be happening in other industries as well, where right now, as you say, the unemployment being so low, what we can offer, though, is training. Is if the person wants to remain in that occupation, if they were dislocated from that occupation, there are federal grants, there are state grants that we can use to help them find another job in that same occupation, and if that's not possible, then to train them in another occupation. But they would have to go through certain training that may be available for them.
So that's addressing what they call the skills gap that we have in the economy. And that's the idea that millions of jobs go unfilled because of this disparity between those of skills employers. They want people with particular skills, and they go out into the market, and they can't find applicants who have those skills. So is that what you're trying to do, is match those two things up?
And that is exactly what's happening. The industry as a whole continues to change with the implementation of computing, automation, digital framework. And so many occupations are changing at this point. And so what we need to do as job seekers is retrain ourselves. What we need to do as government agencies, as for example, with the city, we work very closely with Bexar County, with San Antonio Work, with the colleges, is start working, you know, from K-12 on to train our population and the skills that we need for these changes that are coming, and they're coming very fast. If we don't, a lot of it depends on the individual person wanting to learn those new skills, and then us providing the supports that they need, that our populations need, to be able to fill those jobs that are going to continue to be on demand.
And even though the unemployment is low. Do you help people find work?
That's exactly what we do. We work with many partners in the community. We work with, as a lady who called in, who Sandy? Are having a difficulty, you know, getting back and
work. She should get in contact with you at Workforce Solutions Alamo.
Yes, and the number to call would be 210, if I may.
Yeah.
438-0581, 210-438-0581. That's one of our offices. They can just call us there, and we will be more than glad to help.
And these are free services.
These are free services that we offer to the job.
So we're going to have that information in the link on our website at tpr.org when we post the recording of our program later today. We're going to get back to the phones when we take after we come back from this break. The number is 210-614-8980. I really want to hear from someone who is doing hiring or wants to do hiring, but they can't find the people to take those jobs or the problems that they're finding in the workplace. 210-614-8980. The source continues after this. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. 3.8% unemployment in San Antonio. That sounds fantastic, unless you're one of the guys looking for a job and you can't find one. It sounds like a hokum to you, maybe. And it's also, you know, not reflective of everything that's going on in the job marketplace, because we know there is discrimination in the job marketplace. Certain individuals have a harder time finding work than others. We look at the breakdown of demographics. And some sectors of the population have it much worse than others. We're talking about the job market right now on The Source. We invite you to call in 210-614-8980. And Danielle is on the line. Daniel, welcome to The Source. Daniel, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. I'd like to just have a comment or discussion around, I guess, the importance of adapting to markets and different changes within the economy, whether that's through education or just through realizing that there may be roles that 10 years ago were very prevalent, and due to technology or just due to different changes in the economy, how are we adapting to these changes? Are we holding on to something that we really should be looking at, how we can move people forward in the workforce?
All right. Adapting to the marketplace. Thank you, Daniel. Great point. Bill Beardall with the University of Texas at Austin, Equal Justice Center. Where do you see what's happening with our labor market, and how do you think people should be preparing to adapt to that?
Well, I'm not necessarily
Especially with the coming automation age, which is going to be amazing.
I'm not necessarily the expert on people preparing for the changing economy, but I will say that the key parts of the economy, the low-wage economy we've been talking about, are jobs that are not going away. In fact, they're only increasing. Service sector jobs like restaurant cooks and dishwashers, those are a lot of the low-wage workers who are being exploited. The janitorial and cleaning services, those are jobs that are long-term stable needs in the economy that are not going away. Construction work, construction's booming in much of Texas. And so those are places where I think we need to adapt our law and our system to be able to support those workers adequately. And it's been mentioned here, we need to raise wage levels to something that's a livable rate. We need to enable those workers to organize more and be better informed and be and collectively assert their rights. And we need to improve enforcement of the wage laws that we have, both government enforcement, but where the government's not going to do the job, to be sure the workers know how they themselves can enforce those laws by bringing their own lawsuits for contract violations, for minimum wage violations, for overtime violations. All of those contribute to a healthy ecosystem in our labor market. I think Cal mentioned that ecosystem, and this is important because good wage enforcement and good wages helps not just the workers themselves, though they need it. It helps the high road, upstanding, legitimate employers. They don't get underbid and undercut and put at a competitive disadvantage by the predatory, exploitative employers. They're hurt when people are underpaid or paid low wages as well. This helps our high road employers to have a good enforceable wage laws.
Bill, looking at how we got to those good enforceable wage laws was a compromise that worked out through very rough times in the United States history, where we had no wage protection, we had no laws protecting the workforce, and so we had frequent strikes and disruptions. That's inefficient for the economy. They figured, let's put these laws in place so that the system will be more fair to the worker. Now those laws, either they're no longer valid or they're not being enforced. And so do we have to go back to those inefficiencies?
Well, almost all those laws, especially those adopted in the 1930s in the Great Depression that you're referring to, they're still valid. They're still out there. Now, the wage levels have been allowed to stagnate. We've had a succession of Congresses that have not wanted to raise those wage levels, so minimum wage is still stuck at a lower level now than it was in the late 1950s in terms of real purchasing power. But those laws are still there, and the ability to enforce contract rights is still there. What we need is more enforcement.
Okay.
And we need a state government and a federal government and the right for workers and more workers bringing their own enforcement actions, which they're authorized to do.
All right. Let's go to Amanda. She's called in. Amanda, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. I just had a question, and I don't think it's been addressed yet, and that's age discrimination. I'm a 55-year-old female. I have a master's degree. I have several certifications with the state of Texas through the school system. So I do have very specific qualifications. But let me tell you, finding a job at my age and I suppose my price range is just almost impossible. I've had to sort of invent things for myself to do. And I was just wondering if anyone could address that and what kinds of services are available in my age bracket, in my situation, still looking for a job, and how that's going to impact an ever-growing older population.
All right. So thank you for that call, Amanda. Ricardo Ramirez at the Workforce Solutions Alamo. Do you see a lot of discrimination in the market? What are the differences that we see in unemployment? Do you have it broken down by racial demographics and by age?
I didn't bring that data with me, but there is a certain level of discrimination by age, by sex. Of course, women getting paid less for similar occupations by age. This is something that is more cultural in nature and that, in our opinion, requires a concerted effort where we educate our communities as a whole, where even those who are older may have discrimination against those who are younger. We criticize the millennials, for example. It also goes in different directions. I think it takes a lot of effort from the community to solve those problems. And then the enforcement part from that are...
Age discrimination is illegal, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay. All right, let's go to Tom. Hi, Tom. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air. Tom?
Hello?
Yes, sir, Tom. You're on the air, buddy.
Yeah. Okay. I've heard from friends and relatives that there's a lot of harassment against your traditional Americans or Americans that have been here a while from your recent immigrants. They want to, I guess, try to make room for their family members or their people. So I was wondering if you could talk about that and kind of reverse discrimination in work sites in South Texas.
All right. Let's go to Cal Soto. Have you heard anything along those lines?
Along the lines of immigrant workers harassing non-immigrant workers, honestly, what I've seen in the lower level of the construction industry is that everyone who's at that level kind of in the best situations is able to band together and create strong protections because they are all in the same boat and understand that if we don't apply labor laws to one group of people, then none of us get the labor laws protections. And that goes the same for traditional American workers, for immigrant workers, for all workers, you know. I haven't heard a specific case of immigrant workers retaliating against non-immigrant workers. I have heard of employers, both American, immigrant, whatever, who are the scofflaw employers, which represent, I think, a small percentage of employers, to be honest, but that do go out and harass immigrant workers, harass non-immigrant workers because of the level of work that they're at and commit wage theft and commit other labor violations. So I can speak directly to that, and I do think that what's most important and the theme should be here is how are we creating more opportunities for strong enforcement at a local policy level from the city, putting resources into that to make sure we're monitoring work sites and creating the space for new types of industries to organize and to create stronger protections. And I just want to, because I had some thoughts about some of the other questions, I think we focus a lot on how the future of work is changing the type of work that the new economy is providing in terms of coding or in new tech, and that's important and an important discussion. But the other side that we hear less about is that the future of work is changing the way we are working and how we're finding work. And so where somebody like one of your callers who was asking about age discrimination, which is illegal, it becomes much easier for companies who are hiring and piecemeal from the internet to say, oh, well, you cost too much, so we're not going to hire you for that reason, even if there is this underlying age discrimination that's illegal. And so we are seeing this inversion where day laborers have been contingent workers for a really long time, and day laborers aren't any temporary worker, immigrant and non-immigrant. And that contingent market is now creeping up higher and higher into different industries, and we haven't created the mechanisms from these laws, which are still in effect but are, frankly, almost 100 years old now. Those laws don't protect the contingent market, and we need to figure out new ways to create those protections, or we're going to lose those labor protections for everyone.
So you're talking about the temp workers, the gig economy, people who are being paid for part-time, being expected to work for full-time, that there's all sorts of vulnerabilities in our labor force right now, and people need to become aware that there's a shortage of workers, and they need to start acting like it.
Yeah, day laborers are contingent workers. They're gig workers. They're just like Uber drivers, Lyft drivers, Handy, whatever app you're thinking of. You know, so it's the same issues that are now pervasive in the larger sections of the economy.
All right, Cal Soto, he is a staff attorney, workers' rights coordinator for the National Day Laborers Organizing Network. Also, we heard from Bill Beardall. He's executive director for the Equal Justice Center and clinical professor of law at the University of Texas at Austin. Also with us this afternoon here in the studio is Ricardo Ramirez, director of analytics, performance, and strategy for Workforce Solutions Alamo. We'll have their information on our website. They'll help you find a job if you're looking. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in.